Okay, so now we've reached essentially an important juncture. According to my version of the Mishnah, actually, this begins another Mishnah. So we're now going to 6-6, or maybe you had 6-6 already. And we're basically at the halfway point, depending on your girsa, basically 24 down and 24 to go. What's important to note here is that the language of the Braisa changes at this point. For the first 24, let's call it the first half, roughly every Mishnah, every of the 48 ways began with a base. Base means width. So in other words, we said, B'talmud, B'shmias ozen, B'arichas v'saim, with study, with careful listening, with arranging on your lips, and so on. So the idea was that we discussed in the very beginning of the Mishnah how we had compared the 24 and 30 attributes of the kahuna and the malchus, the priesthood and the kingship, and contrasted with the 48 of the Torah scholar. But we said it's not clear if we're talking here about this being... what we'll call yeshiva talk, the siba or the simen, is the way that you become a Talmud Chacham doing these things, or is the way you can identify the Talmud Chacham that he embodies these things? And both are really true, and that was how we ended up resolving that issue. But in the first half, let's call it, we're clearly focusing, the primary is on the siba, on the action. We're saying, you want to become a repository of Torah? This is what you have to do. You have to be b'mayit tzchok. You have to minimize, limit derech eretz, and so on. Now, we're no longer having a base as the prefix. So now we're not saying the next case, the next, you know, attributes we have are ha-makiras makomo, ha-v'ha-sameach b'chalko, v'ha-osa siagla devarav. So we have the hey before means the one who recognizes his place, the one who is happy with his portion, the one who makes a protective fence around his affairs. So the idea is that now clearly we're shifting, even if we're going to say that these are both both Siba and Simen, they're both the what brings you to become a Talmud Chacham, as well as how you can recognize who is the real McCoy, the real bona fide Talmud Chacham. Clearly, the emphasis has changed now to Simon. In other words, we're saying, who is the person where you'll find real Torah, the real McCoy? It's the one who is Makiras Makomo, who knows his place, and who is Samech B'chalko, and so on and so forth. Okay? And I guess if you really want to be a Talmud Chacham and you're not embodying this particular attribute, so then you better work on it. Okay, that's the idea. So it's an important transition here. In any case, let's go through the case of here, and we'll learn them again, kind of from both directions. Here we have Hamakiras Makomo, the one who recognizes his place. Now, because Makomo, his place, is so ambiguous, there are a number of approaches in the Mefarshim what this is talking about. Okay, I think the most basic shot is that this is sort of building on the idea of a nav of humility again, and the person who has the real repository of Torah is the person who knows where his place is in this world, doesn't overstep his boundaries. He, in the time of Chazal, when they would sit in the base of Midrash, from the Sanhedrin, whatever the story is, there's very clearly defined, you know, pecking order, which row you sat in, depending on your stature. And the bigger, more leading, accomplished scholars sat in the front, and the lesser, younger ones in the back, and so on. So literally, you knew your place. Okay, and that has important ramifications. If you're with someone who knows more than you, you're best served by keeping your mouth shut and listen to what he has to say. It's not your place to speak and give you a chedushim, and so on. Okay? There's a whole different approach to this, which is that what is the makom, what's the place of a person who is embodying Torah, who's inculcated its values? It's his real place is in the world to come. He recognizes he's here just temporarily. His soul came from Shemayim. It's going back to Shemayim. And he's just here passed through temporarily. So he shouldn't get too bogged down in this world. He's not too bogged down, not too fussed in this world. There's a very famous story I'm going to tell her very briefly, because the time is obviously, that a certain wealthy person came to visit the Chavetz Chaim, and he said to the Chavetz Chaim, well, you're the leader of the Jewish people, and here you sit in this house. You got, like, you know, one bedroom, and your bathroom's outside, and you have a dirt floor, and you have a table and chairs, that's it, and one little bed. What? There's no way for a leader of the Jewish people to live. So the Chavetz Chaim said to him, you know, where are you from? I'm from, you know, I'm visiting from the big city. And where are you staying here? I'm staying in, like, the hotel down the street. Oh, really? Like, how many beds does it have? It just says one. How many baths does it have? There's a bath, you know, outside, a shared bathroom down the hall, you know. And so he says, what? You're a rich person like you? What in the world? Why are you living in, like, a one-bedroom, no-bathroom place? Makes no sense. So the rich guy said, what do you mean? I'm just passing through. So the Chavetz Chaim said, yeah, so am I. And that's the idea here, that a person who really is embodying Torah realizes he's just passing through for 120 years, and therefore it's not, it's okay, it's acceptable to just, you know, do with less and get by because you're just passing through. And that's the idea. If a person, A, the person's real McCoy in terms of the being a receptacle of Torah, is someone who essentially knows he's living with his mind in the hereafter, not for this world. So he's naturally going to gravitate towards focus on what's important, and he'll become a repository of Torah. Okay. A third approach is essentially that you should know your place, meaning recognize your strengths and weaknesses, which will allow you to use those strengths to serve the Jewish people in the way that's appropriate, and also recognize where you have room to grow. Of course, that's how you can improve and learn more Torah and grow in that area as need be. Okay, next you have v'asameach b'chelko, the one who's happy with his lot. Again, so if you're looking to find the real McCoy, it's someone who is sameach b'chelko. He's happy with what he has, and he doesn't spend his time worrying about what he doesn't have and what could be. I think you could sort of divide humanity into two basic categories. There are those people, and there are lots of them, who essentially can't help but be focused on the world's shortcomings and what room for improvement there is and how he could better his lot and, you know, where the injustices are in the world. And, you know, he's focused on that. And there is what to be said for that. But the point is, if you're oriented on what you don't have and what isn't right and what could be better, so then you're going to dedicate lots of resources to that and not to Talmud Torah. And if you want to be a repository of Torah, you got to just give that a pass and focus on what's going to be done because of the magnitude of the task of mastering Torah. Okay? A second approach is from the same idea from another direction, like a positive spin on it, which is, what is your chelko? If you're a Talmud Chacham, your chelik is Torah. Ashrenu matav chelkeno. You are someone whose chelik in life is to be learning Torah, and you should rejoice in that. And the one who rejoices in that, of course, will have sort of the natural inspiration to keep on ongoing with what he's doing, and of course will make him a bigger, better Talmud Chacham. Okay? And one other approach, which is important, is that, listen, we always daven for v'senech chalkeinu b'Torah Secha. We want to have our particular portion in Torah. So what that means is that everyone has their own unique skill set and abilities and interests, which will then map onto some specific portion and approach to Torah. You can't be all things to everybody. So you should be contented with your particular portion, your allocation, your interests, your abilities. And if everyone else learning Daf Yomi, when you go to Daf Yomi, you can't follow, or it's too fast, or it's too superficial, and you find it frustrating. So, okay, that's not your chelik. Pursue your chelik. You shouldn't be jealous of what other people are doing. You should be jealous if they're putting in more time than you and more effort than you, but if they're doing stuff in a different way and you have to do more chazara than them, they can go weiter more because their memory's better. Whatever the story is, don't let it bog you down. Accept what you have, be positive about it, and make the most of your chelik. Be sameach in your chelik in Torah. Next, you have va'ose siyag ledvarav, one who makes a siyag is a fence, to dvarav, to his dvarav, his dvarim. Now, since the word dvar has two meanings, the mefarshim are split on what this is talking about. Some understand it to mean dvarav, his words, to put a protective fence around his words, and others say it means his matters, his affairs. So if it's words, so they cite like the precedent of Antigonus Ishsoch, who we talked about in the beginning of the Masechta, how he was telling about his students not to serve for the sake of the reward, and his students, Tzadok and Baisos, understood there was no reward in the end, so he failed to put a proper fence to ensure his students understood. If that's a shot in the Mishnah here, so the idea here is very important. It's saying the responsibility to convey teachings clearly is on the teacher, not on the student. And therefore, it's not right for the teacher to say, I said my piece, they should go review their notes and think about it and figure it out. No. The teacher should make himself available for questions. He should introduce his ideas clearly. He should do a review on what he said. Whatever the students need, it's his responsibility to make sure the students understood what he said and not misunderstand it. The other approach is that Devarov refers to his personal affairs. The idea is that he makes sure that he puts his protective fence around his life to make sure he doesn't mess things up. So that means, you know, the conceptual idea is, you know, he wears belt and suspenders, he sets two alarms and the like. But listen, you have to be it to give a shiur, to go to a chasna, to be at a simcha. So if it's 30 minutes away, don't leave 30 minutes before, because half the time there's traffic. You know that happens, right? Unexpected things happen. So if it's important to you, you got to make a protective fence, you got to build in redundancy and understand that there could be, you know, unexpected events. And be prepared for those things by building those in so that you make sure you don't assume the best and end up missing your basic obligation that you would like to fulfill. Next, you have the Eino Machzik Tova La'atzmo. He doesn't give himself credit, okay? And now, there are a few approaches to this as well, what we're talking about. There's a famous quote from Harry Truman I want to tell you, which I think is the primary pshat in this Mishnah, which is, He said, it's amazing how much you can accomplish if you don't care who gets the credit. And that's the basic idea here of the Mishnah, which is, good, you know, if you want to know who the Torah is really by, the real McCoy, it's someone who's not trying to, you know, be in the limelight, take credit for what he did, and always be the guy. He doesn't have to be the guy. You can let someone else be the guy. Okay? Now, more than that, you know, what could be machzik tov l'atmo? You are taking credit, meaning what about all the other ingredients and people who helped you to get where you are? You think there's such thing as a self-made man? That's nonsense. No such thing as a self-made man. You had your parents, you had the teachers, you had your friends, you had your employer, you had the lucky breaks. So don't take all the credit just because, you know, you become a Talmid Chacham in the end. You know, it was thanks to a lot of people. And not just a lot of people. Don't forget, first and foremost, it was thanks to Hashem. You got to realize that every step of the way was Siyat Tishmaya. So give him credit. Give Hashem credit. And don't take credit for yourself. Don't take, you know, take responsibility. Don't attribute your success to because of you. You know what? If you had the challenges that other people had who didn't make it, maybe you wouldn't have made it either. Next, you have Ahuv, to be beloved. Now, this, to me, bespeaks more than anything else that we're talking here about, you know, Simon as opposed to Siba. You want to know who is the real McCoy? The guy who is beloved. Because that's not an imperative, but saying he is beloved. So really, it's beloved by Hashem and by people. Obviously, we have no way to know who Hashem loves and how much. He loves us all, but you know, that's where the dark about Hashem's attitude towards us. But certainly, it's obvious who people like. And the point of this Mishnah here is saying that if you want to know who is the real repository of the Torah, the real McCoy, people are going to like him. Because Darche Darchenom, Torah's ways are pleasantness, the Torah, the Klal Gadol b'Torah is Ve'Aftel Recha Kamoch. And if someone is really walking and talking Torah, so then if he is an embodiment of Torah and has acquired Torah and been melded with Torah, he's going to be an O of Yisrael. He's going to love Jews, and therefore they're going to love him back. People are going to like to have him around because he's the source of his Mar B'Shalom. He gives Eitzah. He's selfless. All the values the Torah has to teach, he's incorporated, and therefore, of course, people are going to like him. I think I just want to carve out as a sort of like a side point. This is, I guess, for a Talmid Chacham who doesn't have some kind of like political position, I'll call it. But if you're the Rav of a Shul or any other political position like that, obviously, you have to take sides, you have to take policies, not everyone's going to agree with you. And then, of course, there'll be some frustration. That's a different point. But in general, if you're fortunate enough not to have to take sides in those matters, people should love you. And if they don't, so then this isn't about Dale Carnegie, because you know that you can win friends and influence people. It means you're not embodying the Torah's core values, which would make you naturally an object of people who would like to have around. So if people don't like to have you around, you need to get to work to make yourself more appreciated, because that means you obviously haven't incorporated Torah properly. Okay, next you have V'ohev es ha-makom. He loves Hashem. So this, of course, well, we don't know how much Hashem loves us, which is just unimaginable how good it is anyways. The point is, the person who's going to be the real McCoy in terms of the Talmid Chacham, he's going to be actually loving Hashem. First of all, just naturally, you know, if you're learning Lishma, Rambam said Lishma means, you know, for out of love of Hashem, not motivated by something else. So then, of course, it's going to naturally impel you to learn more Torah and understand and be driven to understand it more. My wife has a great definition of love. My wife says, love is what's important to you is important to me. That's the definition of love. So if you love Hashem, you know it's important to him that you should be connected to him and learning his Torah. Of course, you're going to naturally learn his Torah. And obviously, someone who has absorbed the message of the Torah is obviously going to be someone who loves Hashem. They'll speak volumes. So if you're looking for the real McCoy, you want to find someone who really is in love with Hashem. More than that, these Ohev Es HaBrios, he loves humanity, every person, and certainly every Jew. And I just want to speak this out for a second. I think an explanation to a lot of these different attributes in the Mishnah here, Brisa, the Pshat is built on the same premise, which is when Torah was given, it wasn't given to Avram Avinu or Moshe Rabbeinu, it was given to Klal Yisrael as a whole. And it's the Morasha Kehilas Yaakov, it belongs to all of us. And if you want to be a receptacle for holding Torah, you have to be connected to the people, to Klal Yisrael, to be one with them, because that's what makes you a fitting vessel. Torah's not interested in you being alone, separate, disconnected. So naturally, you want to love people, be connected to them, which will make you the natural repository, living a life that's congruent with the Torah and having a vice that's congruent with the Torah, and therefore you'll be a repository of the Torah. More than that, one who loves others will naturally be driven to want to share with them. And if you're a Talmid Chacham, we're talking about here, so then you're going to want to share your Torah with them. And naturally, if your orientation is to share Torah, you're going to learn in a way that you get things clear. You're going to teach Torah and the way they get things clear. You can have Siyat Dishmai in the way you teach things. So the point is, you're going to become a better Torah repository, filled with Torah, connected to Torah, because you love others and want to share it with them. Then you have Ohev Esato. Oh, sorry. So some Girsos have Ohev Eset Tzedako. Some versions of the Mishnah here at Braisa have he loves acts of justice. Okay, others take that out. So if it's in there, the idea is that the Torah's framework, the Torah's mission is to set up a society that's driven by love and justice. And that's explicit. Hashem chose Avram because he's going to teach his children the Derech Hashem and to love justice. Okay? So that means that if you're a positive Torah, you're going to be pained by injustice. You're going to go, it's going to make you crazy when you see injustice being carried out. And to the contrary, you're going to love when seeing justice is carried out. Just think about Moshe Rabbeinu standing up to the Mitzri, Moshe Rabbeinu standing up for Tzipor and his sisters, Avram Avinu standing up for Sodom. We want justice, and it should make you crazy and frustrated to see justice not carried out. And that the person who has got Torah flowing through his veins, he's someone who really is going to love seeing justice carried out, and to the contrary, not be able to tolerate the opposite. Then you have Ohev Eset Tochachos. Now, Ohev Eset Tochachos means love acts of rebuke. First and foremost, this is talking about if you are serious about self-improvement and perfecting yourself and becoming an Adam HaShalem. So the golden ticket, your most fantastic resource, is if someone's going to go out of the way to tell you, you know what, I saw you davening at the Amud and you pronounced that word wrong. So although your natural response is going to be to say, dude, I know what I'm doing, that's terrible. That's your lucky day, because if you invite that kind of criticism, then you're gonna be tipped off to all things you're doing wrong, which is fantastic. How else are you going to straighten yourself out? So love it. Look at it as the greatest thing in the world when someone tells you that you have room for improvement. Yeah, and if they're not right this time, so definitely don't discourage them and become defensive, or they won't tell you next time. Furthermore, except, listen, everyone has shortcomings. This is really important. Besides just the generic theme that we have so much here about Anava, the pasuk says, "Ki Adam ein sadik ba'arta sher yaseh tov v'lo yecheta." There's no such thing as a person who doesn't make mistakes. So if you're doing good, you're going to make mistakes, and therefore, be all ears if someone says how you have room for improvement. Okay? Moreover, if you're learning, if you're receptive to Tochacha, that proves that you're learning L'Shem Shemayim. People will see, that you see yourself, that this isn't about you fooling people, impressing people, convincing people of how clever you are, whatever it is, how good you are. No. Because you're open to being correct. That means you're doing it L'Shem Shemayim. Okay? There's another angle here, which is conveying to other people Tochacha, right? Sometimes it's necessary to help other people to get on the straight and narrow. You should love that too, really. If you're a repository of Torah, you should do it in a loving way, in a caring way, in a way that will be heard. But you ought to help people and care about them to bring them back on the straight and narrow, and therefore you'd be giving them tochacha as well. Next we have Ohev Esamei Sharim, one who loves straightness. So yashrus, integrity, moral compass aligned in a straight way. That is certainly both Siba and Simon for the Talmud Chacham. So that means, first and foremost, you have to avoid crooked thinking, crooked sfaros. You have to be straight. What is a crooked thinking? Crooked thinking is that you have an idea that you want to be true. You have an agenda. You have a psak you want. You have a leniency you're aiming for. And you first say that's where we're headed. And then you arrange your rationalization, your sfar, your logic to support what you want to be true. That's crooked. Straight thinking is you follow the rules, the principles, what is MS, and it leads you to where you have to go, that the chips fall where they may. That is straight thinking versus crooked thinking. And in a more general sense for all of life, a person needs to be principled as opposed to expedient. A person needs to have the rules, the values, the principles that govern his life, and then go with them. And not everything can't be an exception and a special case and a urgent situation and requiring leniency. No. Being straight means you have principles and you go with them. That's Ovis Misharim, to love them. More than that, it's to see that the Torah is there to be miyasher us, to straighten us out. And therefore, all the halachas of the Torah and all the many countless details, yes, fine. It's a rules-based system. You have to follow those rules. But the Torah overarching plan is to rectify people, to make a perfect world, a perfect society, a perfect person. And they're therefore not the rules, the halachas, the mitzvahs, they're not just about mindless technicalities and gizrei hamelech and do whatever the king says because the king says it. There's an element to that, but don't misunderstand. Ultimately, there's an agenda here. Hashem chose these specific rules for a reason. You learn, you know, Shem Shmuel Hirsch, for example, in Chorev, he walks through every mitzvah and what it's meant to do to you and to your persona and to your community and the way you relate to your community and so on. So that's what it means to be yashar, the story, the loving that the Torah is the vehicle by which you will become straightened out. There's a different angle that some of Horsham focus on, which is to not be, to not flatter people, to not do chanufa, to not say one thing but mean another, to not give a thumbs up to someone who should get a thumbs down. Yashrus means you got to love the truth and where it takes you, and therefore, if someone is not A-okay, you don't have to be political, overly diplomatic. You should not lie to the face and say what they're doing is okay when it isn't. Okay. Next, you have misrachek min hakavod. He distances himself from honor. So, a basic first stab of this is simply this is a siyag, a protective fence to one's anava, his humility. We've said so many times the importance of being humble, and therefore it makes sense a person should avoid kavod. So it shouldn't go to his head. And the one who avoids kavod, kavod chases after him. What kavod is going to chase after him? The true kavod, which is the honor of the Torah. Now, more than that, the basic point here is that, you should avoid situations which sort of force people or let people come to honor you. If you're asked to be the guest at the dinner, politely decline. If you have to walk to give the shiur, and if you want to stand up for you, figure a way to do it with less of that, and so on. The bottom line is you want to be focused on doing what's right by Hashem and getting his approval and not other people's approval. And it's simply very difficult to remain humble as you need to be if everyone's telling you how great you are. Next, you have velomegis libo b'talmudo. He doesn't make his heart arrogant with his learning. So one approach here is simply that, not only should you not let other people honor you, you should even in your own heart not honor yourself, so to speak, and become arrogant. But I think the basic pshat of this one of the 48 ways, one of the Devarim, is there's an expression in English, not to rest on your laurels, which is a reference to back in the Greek Olympiad once upon a time, if you won the contest, they gave you like a garland, like a kind of a crown on your head made out of, out of flowers, essentially. Those are called laurels. And to rest in your laurels means, now that you've won, you don't need to compete anymore. You just essentially sort of be last year's champion. Not have to worry about doing it all over again and aiming for greater and greater excellence. Lo megis libo b'talmudo means not to say you've already achieved what you have to achieve and therefore you can sort of rest on your laurels and not achieve more. No. Whatever you achieved so far, that's fantastic. But keep on going. If you learned this morning, you got to learn again tonight. You learned good yesterday, you got to learn again today. You finish Shas, Baruch Hashem, time to start again. So don't, if you've learned a lot of Torah, as Yochanan Zakkai said, that's great, but don't congratulate yourself because that's what you're created to do. So keep on going. Next you have number, whatever it is, depending on your count here, Eino Sameach Behora. He doesn't rejoice in paskin inshallahs and making halachic rulings. So the basic idea here is that everyone makes mistakes. It's easy to make mistakes. And therefore, it's bad enough a person makes a mistake in his life. Okay, so you make a mistake, you own that mistake. But what happens if someone's asking you to tell them what to do? They're asking you for your halachic opinion, your halachic ruling, and you make a mistake then. Well, that's a lot worse, right? Because it's not just you messing up yourself, you're messing up someone else's life. And you know what? People make mistakes. So essentially, when someone asks you a halachic shaila, to paskin in bez, and whatever the story is, so it may be true that you should do it, you have a mitzvah to do it, the right thing to do is to do it, but you know what? Essentially, besides for the fact that it's the right thing to do, you have nothing to gain, everything to lose by paskin a shaila. If you're right, it's great. Nothing good for you. If you're wrong, terrible for you, right? Because you've been the source of this person's sin, and therefore, don't be excited to be the guy who's giving the psak. Leave it to somebody else if you can. And we saw earlier in the Mishnah earlier on, one who, you know, essentially one who's happy to rule like that is a Shota and a Rasha. So don't do that. Okay? Next you have Nosa Ba'ol Im Chavero, to share, to carry the burden, the yoke, with your friend. So this means, first and foremost, to be empathetic. Let me explain something. The difference between empathy and sympathy is important to understand here. Sympathy means that something's happened to you and I validate and acknowledge and realize that that's a bad thing to happen. That's a difficult place to be in. It's going to be painful. So I acknowledge that. I sympathize for you. You lost your grandmother. I'm very sorry to hear it. And I really am sorry to hear it that you've lost your grandmother, right? But while I'm sorry to hear that you lost your grandmother, if while I'm giving you a phone call to say I'm sorry, I spill my coffee on my shirt, I'm probably going to be more upset about the coffee spill on my shirt than you lost your grandmother, because I'm not feeling your pain. I'm just aware that you're enduring that pain. That's sympathy. Empathy is I share in your pain, meaning that the emotion you're experiencing, I'm experiencing it. I'm experiencing it with you. That's to empathize. And the truth is it goes for good and for bad. I could be, when I go to your chasna, I can of course say, listen, when it was my son's chasna, I felt great. Now it's your kid's chasna. I feel great too. I'm happy for you, but I'm actually experiencing the joy. There's an expression in my family, they say that simcha shared is simcha doubled, and tsaros shared are tsaros halved. And not exactly a chazal, there's certainly a chazal that support that idea. And the idea over here is, if you're going to be the real Mekoy Talmud Chacham, you're going to be someone who is part of the people, part of the nation. Klal Yisrael received the Torah as a klal, ke'ish echad b'lev echad. And therefore, you're going to share in your fellow Jew's joy and in his hard times. So here when we talk about Nosa Ba'ol Im Chavero, we mean sharing in his pain, becoming part of him, and helping him through it. Because when you help, when you share in his pain, you really do help him through it. So when you visit a sick person, you take away a 60th of his illness, and so on. When you share with someone and they feel they're not doing it alone, it gives them the strength to go forward. In addition to the emotional empathy, there's also the basic point that Nosa Ba'ol Im Chavero means you got to help him out. You see your friend struggling with whatever his burden is, make yourself useful, make yourself helpful, do something about it. The real Talmud Chacham, that you're beyond, if this is a siman, is someone who is Nosa Ba'ol Im Chavero. If he's the real deal, if it's not just that he learned a lot of Torah, but a lot of Torah has gone into his bones, of course, when he sees his fellow Jew in need, he's going to respond with action, being helpful. So that's, and that's going to make him be a ro'oya, an appropriate kli, to mekabel the Torah. Okay. There's a different approach to this, which is more direct to Talmud Torah per se, which is, if you're learning with someone, let's say, and he is struggling to formulate his thought, right? He doesn't agree with you, right? But he when he starts bringing you his raya why you're wrong, he forgets what he's going to say, or realizes, oh, there's a little loose end that he has to sort of tie. So help him. Help. Nosa Ba'ol Im Chavero means help your chaver to formulate his Torah thought, his chelik. You know, help him get it clear. Even if he's saying you're wrong. Okay, so let him think you're wrong, and maybe you are wrong, but help him get to the end of his thought, because you only have to gain by helping him to think the issue through clearly. You'll think it through clearly, you'll see his perspective, and you'll help him to get to where he needs to get to in his Talmud Torah. Okay, next we have the Machriel Chafschus. Machriel Chafschus means you tip the scale in favor of your chaver. So some learn this is simply, I find this quite strange actually, but anyway, some learn that in the previous Mida was that a person is Nosa Ba'ol Im Chavero, help him to shoulder his load. Here we're saying, even you carry the majority, you carry 51%, and let him carry 49% of the burden, so to speak, your Machriel L'Chavschus. That's one approach. But in general, the point here is that you, like along the notion of being Dan L'Chavschus, you judge someone favorably, but the point is, you help a person. Machriel means you help him to tip the scale in his favor. So that means every single person is walking through life, and in every social interaction, part of their brain, if they're just a regular person, normal person, part of their brain is thinking all the time, how do I portray that I'm good and competent? Everyone's thinking that all the time. The way they talk, the way they dress, the way they act, they want to give off, I'm a good person, I'm a competent person. And you know what? We all aren't perfectly good, and we all aren't perfectly competent, and we all stumble sometimes. Morally, we stumble over our two left legs. And Machriel Chafschus is saying, make it your business to help your chaver be respected, maintain his dignity, that, you know, cover up when he, you know, for his shortcomings. Again, we're not talking about being dishonest here, but the same way you do for yourself. You're not being dishonest when you put your best foot forward. So help your chaver put his best foot forward. Machil chavschus means help him to tip the scales in his favor so people should judge him favorably. The truth is, I actually heard this Hillary Clinton say this. I don't think it's her fault, but that's where I heard it from. That she said, we judge others by their worst actions, and we judge ourselves by our best intentions. And Machil Chavschus says, when you judge other people, just as you want to be judged by your best intentions, judge them by the best intentions. You put yourself into their headspace for a second, and maybe they didn't mean so badly, and they really, if you'd be coming from their place, you'd have similarly have the same kind of opinion or action or attitudes that they did too. Many times in Chazal, you see, like when Abai and Rav Yosef are learning, Rav Yosef said something that didn't make sense. Abai said, oh, Rebbe, maybe you meant this. Or sometimes there's like, you know, someone says something and they're like, liglug, they laugh at him. So then the whoever's giving the shiur, Rav, whoever it is, says, if it's a chashav person, you shouldn't laugh when a chashav person says something. You should take it seriously. So, Machil Chavschus, help tip in your mind and other people's minds to favor of your chaver. Next, you have ma'amido al ha'emes, which means set him up, stand him up on the truth. So this isn't about a person's moral failings, but his learning, right? In terms of, you know, a person's learning something and he gets it wrong, so it's terrible to think, not my problem, so he doesn't get it, so big deal. No. There's always a guy in the shir, in the yeshiva, like he's the guy you go to and you don't understand something because he knows, he gets it best. So be that guy. And if these Devarim are sibos, so then be that guy, because it'll force you to get things clear. You're the guy who helps people to get clarity, so it'll, of course, engender clarity in you. If it's a simon, you want to know who's a real Makoi Talmud Chacham, he's the guy who is Mamid Emes. He's the guy who stands at the ready. If you have a question, he'll help you through it. He'll help you get clarity. That's what he stands for, okay? Now, good, fine. Then you have Ma'amidu al Hashalom. Ma'amidu al Hashalom means the next, like in the series of, it means stand him up on peace. Okay? So, again, we're not talking about tochacha of a moral failing or even of MS. But here we're talking about peaceful relations between fellow Jews, between fellow people, you know? There's a pasuk, Ba'keh Shalom V'Rafehu, you have to pursue and love peace. But more importantly, let's talk about this again. These are to my mind, like I told you, these are the simanim of a Talmud Chacham. So a basic feature of a Talmud Chacham is Talmidei Chachamim Marbim Shalom Ba'olam. They make it their business to make the world a peaceful place. That is the real McCoy. If you see a supposed Talmud Chacham was making machlokas and making people fight and making people uncomfortable, not the real McCoy. So Ma'amidu al Hashalom means that a Talmud Chacham makes it his business to help people get along with each other. Certainly if it's with himself, if he's got a conflict with somebody else, he figures out how to get the person to be satisfied and at peace. But even Aaron Cohen style, you know, he's not a party to the issue, but he sees two people fighting. He makes it his business to bring peace because there's no kli that's machzik, the Torah, better than peace. So therefore a person has to make shalom to make sure it's there. Next we have Misyashev Libo B'Talmudo. He settles his heart with his learning. And many girsos have the word libo taken out, so it's just mityashev b'talmudo. So, which would be, he learns in a settled way, he settles his learning. So if it's with libo, he settles his heart with his learning. What that means is that if something doesn't sit right, that's a red flag. You have to drill it down. You have to get the answers. You have to resolve it. I don't mean if you don't agree with something. That may mean that you're allowed to disagree, or maybe there's two opinions, or whatever it is. But sometimes you just say, you know, that just doesn't make sense. How could they say that? And at that point, you need to drill down and square it away so you resolve exactly the legitimacy, the rationality of that opinion. And that's, of course, important because if you don't, there's two major ramifications. First of all, essentially, you'll have sort of a dismissive attitude towards Torah and the Chacham. You say, they say dumb things, Chas v'Shalom, even sort of subconsciously because you've dismissed it. And second of all, if there's something you just don't understand, doesn't sit right with you, that must mean that there's a disconnect, which you need to resolve. Maybe you need to learn something they didn't understand before, get your values straight or your thinking straight, or whatever the story is. Now, if it's misyashev b'talmudo, without the word libo, it means make your learning sort of settled and squared away. So that would mean essentially, first of all, start with establishing clear foundations, get the basics clear, understand what you're learning before you go on to pilpul and kashas and what ifs. First, just make sure everything is sound and square and understood, the basics, the fundamentals, okay? There's a different approach altogether, which is sort of the way you learn. The way you learn should be we had b'yishuv before, but mit yashev t'mudul means that you should arrange for learning to be consistent, regular, not sporadic, not intermittent, not getting up and going down, not breaking in the middle. You should learn sort of like patiently and not rush to conclusions and, you know, like that. There's one other approach. If you're on the teacher side of things, so then as a chacham, so we're talking here about a simon, so the teacher who is a good mechanech, who has this midah of the Bemeches Devarim, will teach people in a clear, organized, mesudar, methodical way, which builds from the bottom up, from principles up. Okay, and that way, it's not just a clear presentation, but the students will be able to understand clearly, and he'll make sure that the teaching is done in a meyushavdik, and like in a orderly, well-grounded way. Next you have, now there's some girsos have shoel umeshiv, asks and answers, and some have it as two separate midos. You have shoel ke'inyan, he asks on topic, and meshiv kahalacha. Meshiv kahalacha means that he answers, you know, on point, he answers properly. So let's just break them apart so we discuss both separately. Shoel ke'inyan means asking on topic, staying focused, not asking the annoying what-if questions which take you off topic. And worse than that, what if you ask questions that are totally off the topic altogether? We're studying here in Pirkei Avos, all of a sudden you have a kash from Maseches Gittin. No, don't do that. Don't do that. There's plenty of time later to explore, everyone explore. But now, be focused at the task at hand, and you should ask questions, but ask questions on topic, on point. Now, when you ask questions that are off point, besides for distracting your own head and things not being like settled and clear in your own mind, you distract the rest of the class. And also, you're asking for trouble with the poor Rebbe, because the Rebbe either will be embarrassed, or not give you a good answer, or give you a wrong answer because he's not holding in the sugya now. So don't do that, okay? On the other hand, we're saying there's an imperative here to actually be shoel, to ask questions. So this is important. It's important that if you have a question, don't ignore it. You have to raise the question and get it resolved. And don't be afraid to do it. You know, probe to the depths, but just, you know, ke'inyan, in a rational, orderly, on-topic kind of way. There's a different approach to this, which is if we're, again, we're focusing on the siman of a Talmud Chacham. So if he's shulk and he's asking on topic, what that means is that when your pedagogic method should be starting with a question. This, of course, is sort of a distinctively Jewish mode of education. You see it in every Gemara Shir starts with a kasha, every Devar Torah starts with a kasha, the Pesach Seder starts with the four questions. So you want to ask questions. The reason why asking questions is so important as a leader before you give the answer is that if you don't appreciate, you don't know something, so then it doesn't stick. It's kind of in and out the other. But if I tell you, oh, you know, I ask you a question and you don't know the answer, that sort of kind of like carves a little hole in your mind, in your brain. We're like, oh, there's a hole here that needs to be filled. Oh, and I'm looking for an answer. And when you get it, sort of fills that hole and it has this place. It's got a niche where it lodges onto and stays there in your mind. It's a big difference. In other words, if you hear it in passing, you know, if I tell you what the world's biggest rodent is, you're like, okay, that's nice, and you'll promptly forget it, right? But if I ask you a question, here's a piece of trivia for you. Hey, what is the world's largest rodent? And you think, you're like, think, yeah, I don't know. Is a rabbit a rodent? I'm not sure what it is. So if I tell you, oh, it's a capybara, you're like, oh, capybara, largest rodent? Oh, now I know. So like it slots in, and you're going to remember it, okay? So shoel ke'inyan, raise questions so that it's on topic, so there's a way for you, the students, to remember. Then you have meshiv kahalacha. So hameshiv kahalacha means that he answers on point, correctly, truly, fully. You don't fudge it. If you don't know the answer, you can say, yeah, you don't know. But if you do know the answer, don't fudge it and don't beat around the bush. Say what it is. Don't start the answer is it's a machlokas. Don't start that way. No. Meshiv kahalacha. You ask a question, this is the din. Now, asterisks. If you're interested, it's actually a machlokas between shach and the taz, blah, blah, blah. But answer on point. It's important that the person who's on the receiving end of the question gets a clear answer, not a lot of fluff and obfuscation, you know, lack of clarity. Next, you have shomea umosif. This means hear, understand, and then mosif, add. Now, I think it's really important. What this is saying here is that everyone's davening v'sen chalkenu b'sar asecha. You want to have your own portion in Torah, and that means that you have to somehow be mechadish something, add to it. So, not everyone can be mechadish nu chiddush in the teretz of the Tosfos. Okay, that's already a lot. But you can if you have what to add in terms of, oh, here's an application of that principle in my life, or here how this is different than something else, oh, that's raised on a topic that I've been thinking about, and therefore you can see these two points are kind of connected. Whatever the story is, the message here is to be shomea, understand, then get to the point where you've understand it so clearly and fully that you can relate to it and add to it in some way. It adds to your life, you can add to it. I want to emphasize something here. It doesn't say mosif, it says shomeo mosif. It doesn't mean you got to say a chiddush in every sugya and make things up as you go along and stretch your creative legs. Don't do that. It's you're looking for emes here. So it's not just you should add. Everyone could say a dumb, you know, boichsvara, you know, make things up from the shooting from the hip. What it's saying is shomei emosif. So you have to, yes, you're going to add, but it's going to be, your insight only comes after you've done the effort of the first, you know, this is the 43rd, let's say, of the Mem Chesavar. You've gone through the first 42. You've done Betalmudim, Shmias the Ozen, and Arichas Vasayim, and Yishev, Binas Alev. You've done through the whole process. You have, you know, you've got the depth of this topic. Okay, now you can be Mosif. But don't try to be Mosif before you get the Shomea part of it. Okay, now we have Halomed Almanas Lilamed, one who learns in order to teach. Now, this is really important for two separate reasons. Meaning, the point here is saying is when you learn, you should have a mind that you're going to be giving this over. Now, there's two reasons for this. But one is sort of like a supernatural Siyat Dishmaya thing, and second one is just a very practical thing. As far as the Siyat Dishmaya goes, so listen, there's just no doubt about it. Every Magid Shir, everybody who's ever had to, you know, give a whatever Shir, knows full well that he has a special Siyat Dishmaya Sugga, which you couldn't understand yesterday when the Shir said, because of the Schus of the Talmidim, so all of a sudden, magically, he understands it. So that's really the Siyat Dishmaya that Hashem's coming to. And that's like a Havtacha Chazal give us that Halomed Almanas Lelamed Maspikim Yado Lilmud Lelamed. One who learns with the intention of trying to teach. So then Maspikim Yado, Hashem grants him, heaven grants him the ability not just to learn but also to give it over. Okay, so there's a Siyat Dishmaya here. Like the Gemara in Bava Kama says, Kol Mavak Ashrachim Mal Chavero, the same way if you pray for somebody else for something, and you need that same thing, so Hashem will answer you first. So if you're seeking to teach others and benefit them, so Hashem will benefit you as well first, in fact, so you can give it over. That's sort of the lamala benetav, the supernatural aspect. But there's a sort of natural aspect here too, which is, you know, everyone's experienced it. If you know you have to speak on Friday night, so every time someone says Devar Torah throughout the week, you listen, you're like, oh, is this going to be something I can give over? Is this the thing I'm going to say? And you pay attention. You know, you're engaged and you get it clear because you know you have to say it over, so you get it clear. So the same idea, if you're learning with a thought, listen, I'm going to learn this, I'm in this Mishnayos Shirim on Pirkei Avos, and I'm going to say it over to my buddy. I'm going to say it over to the person I go around for a walk with. I'm going to say it over on my Shabbos table. So all of a sudden, you're like, you're tuned in. You're focused because you need to understand it because you need to give it over. So in a very basic way, if you're learning mindful of the fact that you have to get it clear enough to say it over, you'll pay much more attention. You'll probe more deeply. You'll make an effort to understand because of the nature of the fact that you're feeling an obligation to give it over later on. So from the outset, just commit to teach somebody what you know, what you learn. If you have that attitude, it's going to change the way you learn. Then you have Halomed Almanas Lelasos. So this means you don't only intend to teach it, but actually to fulfill. It's a higher level. And the Chazal say, Maspikim b'yado, such a person from heaven, they ensure he has not just lilmod or lilamed, to learn and teach, but also lishmor v'la'asos. It'll be kept with him. He won't forget it, especially Siyat Hashmaya, and he'll be able to do it. So the idea here is that, again, similar to the before, but even more so, if you are relating to your learning as this is instructions for what I need to do, so then you're clued into the reality of it, the details of it, because it's got to be practical. I mean, you learn something saying, you're learning Bava Metzia, and you're learning about the halachas of returning lost objects. So if it's just a daf yomi shir in one ear out the other, so you don't pay much attention. But if you think, listen, this is Torah's Chaim, this is Hashem's instructions for living. Next time I'm walking down the street and I see a shopping bag that's been left behind, I need to know what to do. So I need to pay attention, because it makes a difference. Where it was, how it was, what's inside it, is it unusual, are the ingredients unusual? You'll realize, I need to know what to do, so therefore you'll think about the applications, you'll ask the relevant questions, you'll be engaged more. So again, the intention of fulfilling the Torah is essential. Don't forget, lo hamidish hu ikar el hamaseh. The purpose of the Torah, first and foremost, is to be able to carry out the instructions Hashem wants. So you should be oriented towards, this is what Hashem has to say. It's important to me to understand what Hashem has to say. And therefore, you'll pay more attention, and your Torah will become more real with you, and you'll retain it better. You'll be engaged with it more. That's Halomed Almanas Lasos. Then you have Machkim Es Rabo, the one who makes his Rebbe wise. So, On a basic level, we've mentioned the idea before, the importance of asking questions and the beneficiary of the Rebbe getting those questions, right? Because we actually said it before, even the, you need the small log to light the big log. There's the famous story above Matzia of Rabbi Yochanan when his chavrusa and student and brother-in-law Reish Lakish died. No one could ask him kashas on his whatever he had to say. So he was like very frustrated. He was very depressed when all he gets people to show why he's right. He wants to know why he's wrong. He needs questions. So therefore, we're saying here that make it your business to ask pertinent, difficult questions to your Rebbe. It's a benefit to him and a benefit to you. There's a different approach altogether in this, which is that, you know, when you're learning, so it's, you should put your machkim, is like a hefil, it's a causative, it means to make wise. So it means sort of, in your mind, to make your rabbi wise in your own head. The idea being sort of, put him on a pedestal, so to speak, that when he says something, you think, wow, this person, he's a smart guy, he's put the time to learning, he's well-meaning, and therefore what he's saying must carry weight. And just because you don't agree with it, doesn't make sense to you, don't dismiss and say, oh, I guess he just made a mistake, he's dope. No, no. Don't just assume he made a mistake because it doesn't agree with what you thought. Say that he didn't make a mistake probably and try to understand what he's saying. And that orientation, that attitude towards that the source of your information, your Rebbe, is a chacham because you're machkim him in your head, you label him, this is a wise man, will force you to take what he says more seriously. It'll make a deeper impact. It'll force you to question your assumptions. Therefore, you're going to learn a lot better. Next, we have a mechaven es shmuaso, which means the one who either sets his learning straight and right, or he directs his learning effectively. So if we're talking about the student, the idea here is that a person can't just be satisfied with memorization and, you know, just accepting things as they are. No, you have to, if you have a tradition, you hear something from your teacher, you got to clarify what did he mean and get to the depth of it. You have to get the underlying principles, you have to iron out the details. You have to make sure that you're getting exactly what he said, not adding or taking away from what he said. You have to get it exactly right in your mind. If you're focused on the teaching side of things, so here it would mean that when you're teaching, make sure that you are teaching clearly. You're not adding or subtracting what you learned. You're making it clear that what you're saying gets directly to the point and gets into the heart of your student. And that brings us to the laughs of the 48 ways, which is Vaha Omer Davar B'Shem Omro, the one who says something in the name of the one who said it. So this is the idea of giving credit where credit is due and connecting your teachings back, that your learnings back to those who taught it to you. I think there's a well-known principle, it's a Gemara in Yevamos, Tzadi Zion, which says, Kol Tam Rechachem She'omrim Davar Shmua Mipiv B'Olam Hazeh Sfasosav Dovos Bekever. Anytime you have a Talmud Chacham who taught something, even if he's no longer alive, he's in the grave, if people say his teaching is over in his words, so like his lips move. The idea is that to credit back to the person, proper kavod, proper respect, proper gratitude, to credit the person who said it. But more than that, by crediting the one who said it, you both make it contextualize. You contextualize the source of this information. It makes a big difference, right? If I tell you something is a pasuk or a gemara or a mishnah, or I heard it from my teacher, or heard it's a Rashi, it makes a difference. Those things make a difference. So by knowing where the source comes from, it helps you understand context better, and therefore it'll be more meaningful to you. It'll make the teaching more meaningful, and it connects you back to its source. This is very important. Chazal make a big effort to make sure the Mesorah is maintained. Therefore, the students were careful to say what they learned from their teachers, not just in their names, but precisely in the way that they heard them, the best they could, even word for word. Now, the Mishnah goes on to say here that halamadata, the truth is you've actually learned this before, this principle of the requirement to say a davar b'shem omro. Shakol ha'omer davar b'shem omro mevi ge'ula la'olam. Anyone who gives proper attribution and credit and says something in the name of the one who taught it to him, he brings ge'ula to the world, redemption comes to the world. Shenamar, as the pasuk says, "V'tomer Esther leMelech b'shem Mordechai," when Esther Hamalka in the Megillah tells over to Achashverosh that there is a plot, Bigson and Teresh are planning on assassinating the king. So Esther says it in the name of Mordechai. She gives credit to Mordechai, and of course, as things unfold, it's because the king knew it was Mordechai's efforts that he ended up elevating Mordechai, ended up what led to the downfall of Haman and the saving of the Jews. So you see that that essential point only happened because Esther didn't just say it from her own, watch out for big son of Teresh, but she gave credit back to Mordechai. And the idea here, sort of the mida keneged mida on this point, is that when you give credit to someone, it's sort of like, it's almost like you've lost, your return is lost object. He has something which is out of place, out of context, and you put it back into context. You return it to him. And that's what Gullus really is, right? Gullus is the exile. The Shekhinah is not where it belongs. The Jewish people aren't where they belong. And we're sort of like lost, out of context. And the Geula, the redemption, is the return to context, to being in our proper place, to fitting in where we belong, whether that's the Shekhinah back in the Makom HaMikdash, where it belongs, the Jewish people back in Eretz Yisrael, where they belong. But the point is that returning someone which is out of place to where it belongs in place is the Geula process, and returning credit or credit due, a statement which is out of place, out of context, connecting it back to its source, is the proper thing to do, and therefore the reward is Mida Keneged Mida, bringing of redemption. And with that, Baruch Hashem, B'Siyata Shemaya, we finish the 48 Ways to Wisdom, Avos, Perek Vav, Mishnah Vav.